Hello and welcome. This is A Very Earth Eats Christmas. I'm Annie Corrigan.
I think that's what brings a lot of these things back around the holidays is the tradition of using the seasonal ingredients and celebrating with those.
That's Chef Daniel Orr. He's the mastermind behind our holiday feast today, which will include dishes inspired by local and seasonal living in southern Indiana, like roast duck, parsnip soup, a goat cheese ball, and foraged mushrooms. He'll have some help preparing the food from three old friends. We'll share stories, have some laughs, and taste a lot of great food. And the day wouldn't be complete without some holiday music by southern Indiana-based singer-songwriter Krista Detour. So pour yourself some eggnog, cozy up with a warm sweater, and join us as we celebrate A Very Earth Eats Christmas. Our hostess today is Gretchen Marks. She's opened up her home to us, located in the outskirts of Columbus, Indiana, for the preparation of our feast. Her property, which is surrounded by tall, old trees, includes a substantial fenced-in garden, a pond, and a coop and pen for her 50-some chickens.
Well, when I buy chicken feed, I really look at the sack more than I do what's inside because I know that I can do something fun with it.
But compared to her 50 years as an artist, Gretchen Marks is relatively new to the egg business. As her chicken population has grown, she's found they're inspiring her artistically.
And so I had been just piling them up and getting rid of them, and I thought one day, oh, that is not what I should be doing. And so I started really seriously gathering lots of different brands and making art. Anyway, I love finding found things and incorporating them, using them in a different way. So, you know, I'm a mixed media artist, and that's what I get my kicks from. You know, I love doing that.
She admits to selecting her chickens based on the beauty of their feathers and the color of the eggs they lay.
You know, these are from Araucanas. They're originated in Chile, and those are the ones that lay the blue and greenish eggs. Some of them are almost olive green.
I gotta say, they're beautiful.
Aren't they gorgeous?
They're just beautiful to look at, and especially when you compare them to the brown egg, they're like little pieces of art.
Little jewels.
Yeah, really.
They are. They're gorgeous. Now, this is a very high-tech here, the entry. Hey, girls. You have guests. Come here. Come on. Come on.
You started this because you just couldn't get eggs with the flavor that you wanted. You were just sick of it. So tell me the difference in the taste.
Oh, it's unbelievable. The yolks are all deep orange, and they just sit up and look at you, you know? There's nothing like a fresh farm egg. The others taste watery. They're pale and they have not much flavor. And I just think it's a wonderful thing to have your own eggs, to sell them, give them away. Hey, it's all right. It's okay. It's all right.
After feeding her chickens, Marks uses the big burlap feed sacks as the base for her collages. Her studio is on the second floor of her home, which is an amalgamation of three old barns.
Go in.
Thank you.
Sure.
This place is something out of the turn of the century, dimly lit and drafty, with an imposing fireplace owning the center of the large common room, and old-fashioned tables and chairs carefully arranged into small groups.
It's okay, Willis. It's all right.
So now we're going up the stairs. Ooh, steep stairs.
Very steep and actually very narrow. Well, here's some of the sacks right here.
It's amazing to see all this vibrant color on your work. And I'm walking on brick floor and I've got old-time furniture around me, yet I have this fantastic art that is so vibrant on the walls. I love the contrast.
Oh, thank you. I do too.
She incorporates photos of her chickens in the feed sack collages, blue, green, brown, white eggshells, and the various colored and patterned chicken feathers.
So, then this is just kind of a little gallery space through here.
Oh, wow. The hallway turned gallery. How did you get into creating art?
Well, I can't remember when I didn't do something like drawing or playing with clay. Or actually, when we were kids, I have one sister, and when we were kids, on rainy days, we made scrapbooks. Now, I'm 73 years old, so that was way before scrapbooking.
Right, was in, yeah.
Right. And I think that's where a lot of my multimedia interest comes from, is making those scrapbooks, because it was so much fun.
Wow, Gretchen, so your work is beautiful.
Thank you.
And I want some eggs.
I have some ready for you.
All right.
You can see images of Gretchen Mark's feed bag collages on our website, eartheats.org. Welcome back to A Very Earth Eats Christmas. I'm Annie Corrigan. Gretchen Marks' kitchen looks like a farmer's market exploded all over it. Luckily, we have a detailed menu for our holiday feast, so all these ingredients have a very specific purpose.
I think that's what brings a lot of these things back around the holidays, is the tradition of using the seasonal ingredients and celebrating with those.
Chef Daniel Orr is the one doing the heavy lifting in the kitchen today.
Things that you had grown all summer long, and maybe you've dried them or preserved them or canned them, and then at Christmas time you break out all the stops and you enjoy all that stuff that you've been working on all year.
But he's not alone. Marks is a great cook in her own right. Mary Lou Orr, or ML, is Daniel's mother, and she taught him quite a bit about cooking herself.
Darling!
Who are you?
Rounding out the culinary team is Jim Gregory, a semi-retired chef living in Columbus, Indiana.
Oh, my God. I'm great.
Oh, God.
How are you?
Well, I'm still standing up. Thank God.
Good.
Guys, don't leave me.
I don't speak very well.
That's a lie. Guys,
that would be the day.
When I was a kid, we used to go over to Jim and Claire's house, and that was one of the times, I mean, brie wasn't as kind of popular or available as it is nowadays, and we'd always have that during the holidays, and he'd also bring in some wonderful sweet gorgonzola from Italy, and I remember having that out there in the cold room, and they had all their desserts, and it was just like a month-long party at their house.
This was your house?
Yes.
You had a month-long Christmas party?
Oh, yes. It never ended. But we both, Claire and I, both loved to bake, so there was always tons of European cookies and fruit cakes and all of the good things.
Yeah. So the steam puddings are done in a mold. It's a very, you know, traditional English Christmas dish, and a lot of times that you'd hear of, you know, plum puddings and things like that would be flambéed at the table and served with some really nice chantilly cream or some clotted cream.
A lot of cognac in the sauce.
So it's that kind of party.
Oh, that kind. Right.
So then let's talk about over here. We've got a variety of nuts. Let's go to the nuts first. Right. Walnuts.
Hazelnuts. And pinoli, pine nuts, all goes either in vegetables, desserts, and sauces.
Let's talk specifically about hazelnuts, because they're my favorite. So talk to me about a couple dishes that you put hazelnuts in.
Well, let me think. Well, there's wonderful hazelnut torts, chocolate and hazelnuts, right? Or hazelnuts with Brussels sprouts. Wonderful flavors.
Hazelnuts with Brussels sprouts?
Yes. Sautéed Brussels sprouts. You blanch them so they're still nice and have nice texture. And then you sauté the hazelnuts with a little olive oil and butter and toss Brussels sprouts in. Wonderful.
This is my surprised face, because I can't imagine those two flavors going together, but I've never had it.
Ooh, yes, that's wonderful. Yes. That's
you have a smile on your face.
Good combination. And you can also, if you have some hazelnut oil, you could drizzle a little bit of that on them, a little bit of citrus, and maybe a little bacon in there too. Everything's better with bacon.
You have to try these things. They're wonderful.
Okay, all right.
Close your eyes and taste them, and they're marvelous.
Can we talk about what the heck this is?
Okay, this is a cardoon. It looks like kind of celery on steroids, but it's a member of the thistle family, same family as artichokes. It has a kind of a sweet artichoke heart kind of flavor to it. And it's one of those things that is very seasonal. So it's something that you have late fall, early winter, and it does store pretty well. So if you have a root cellar or something, you can wrap it in newspaper and keep it in the cool root cellar until Christmas time. And then it's wonderful served with wild game. And I think that it will really be nice with the ducks today because it'll kind of pick up some of that smoky flavor of the fireplace.
I've never had it, so I'm going to get a chance to taste it today?
Absolutely, yeah.
Can you eat it raw?
It's not as good.
Would you want to eat it raw?
Somebody tasted it yesterday raw, and they liked it. I've never eaten it raw.
Somebody.
It's kind of sweet. It has a little sweetness to it.
A little fiber.
The centerpiece of Mark's living room is a fireplace, which Chef Orr is taking advantage of. Most of the dishes using these fabulous local and seasonal ingredients will be cooked over an open fire. This first recipe is the first thing to start cooking today because we want to be eating it as soon as possible. It's baked brie with hazelnuts, pine nuts, walnuts, cherries, and apricots.
What I like to do is to take the brie and cut it in half, and that way it exposes that wonderful, rich, creamy interior. And then I can put it right back in these boxes and decorate it. I'm going to put a little bit of salt and pepper on it. And that's just going to kind of wake up those flavors a little bit. And I've got a kind of collection of different dried fruits and nuts. So I'm going to use some dried cherries. And then I've got wonderful Oregon hazelnuts. Okay, and we're just going to push those kind of down into the cheese. Okay, and so we're just kind of going around in circles, developing kind of a nice little pattern. You could do stripes if you wanted to. You can be creative with this. Next, we'll do maybe a layer of the apricots. So we'll do a little bit of walnuts and some pine nuts around the outside. And then I'm going to finish by glazing this with a little bit of honey. So here we've got some nice honey. We're using a basswood honey from northern Indiana. And that's going to really kind of bring out the sweetness of the fruit. And it's also going to be kind of our glue that holds everything together a little bit. And then we're going to take this to the fireplace and just let it kind of warm and get all gooey and delicious.
There really is nothing better than baked brie.
It's the perfect thing to serve with some nice crusty bread or crackers.
I see this as like a great appetizer. So we're starting at 10 in the morning. This will be ready, what, in an hour or so? And then we can start eating around lunch?
Absolutely, yeah. This will take, you know, depending on the heat of your fire, and if you get too hungry, you can just kind of push it back in there and get it going real quick. So once you got, and you could do this a day or two ahead, have this in the fridge and just pull it out and either even just set it next to the fireplace and it's going to get warm. In France, they have something called raclette, which is another type of cheese that you have next to the fireplace and you scrape it off and you with potatoes. So it's a real old tradition. But I think it's a wonderful thing to have during the holidays. Okay, and if you're going to go to the bother of cooking in the fireplace, one thing I love to do is to roast some garlic. And what you do with the garlic is just cut off the little tips of the heads of the garlic, so that kind of opens it up. And we're going to put it in a aluminum foil package. And we're going to season it with a little bit of olive oil and salt and pepper. And then we're going to wrap this up into a little package. Okay, and then the garlic can get nestled in the coals. And you can do this even if you don't do a big, big fireside dinner like we're doing today. If you build a fire at night, as the coals die down, just kind of nestle this into the coals. And the next morning, you've got some wonderful baked garlic that you can smear on your biscuits or toast or whatever in the morning.
You guys like brie?
Oh, yes.
So you put it back in the little wood containers. We're not worried about the wood, I don't know, catching fire?
It might a little bit, but we'll pull it, when it starts to get that hot, we'll pull it off and we'll put it on a nice little plate, and you'll get kind of a smoky aroma from the wood. And I'm going to put those garlic cloves right down here.
Right on the fire, literally.
But just kind of off to the side a little bit. We don't want it to burn. We just want them to slowly cook.
Check out photos and salivate at the baked brie and the bunch of roasted garlic at eartheats.org.
my Christmas memories, always there's a cheese ball. Always at every Christmas, every memory I have is a cheese ball.
And a lot of times they're really bad.
Horrible. They're all wrapped in plastic, covered in miscellaneous nuts. Awful.
And sometimes they're even gritty. And they have this kind of fake port wine poured on top of them. And very odd. Well, we're going to make one that's going to change your mind about cheese balls.
Don't maybe get me wrong. I love cheese balls. You know, I'm not a classy lady.
And if anybody calls you a cheese ball, you know, it can be a compliment if you make your cheese ball like this. All right. So I've got about a pound of good goat cheese. This is from Caporeal Farms. Judy Shad makes this wonderful soft goat cheese. And she would hate to see you use one of her aged goat cheeses, you know, like the old Kentucky Tome, for cooking. But she loves to see her fresh goat cheese used. You know, when you do an aged goat cheese, there's a lot of love and passion put into that and the whole way that it's aged and processed, whereas the fresh goat cheese just begs to be played with. And so we're going to do that today. I'm going to make this a little bit sweet and a little bit savory, you know. So we have some dried cherries. You could use cranberries. We're going to rough chop some pecans. And you could use any kind of nuts. We're going to use the pecans. I just think of pecans taste a lot like Christmas to me. And we're also going to throw some bacon in this.
Of course.
So I've got some Mariah bacon from Columbus, Indiana. It's a peppered bacon, smoked pepper bacon. We're going to cut these into little pieces. All right. Now we're just going to mix this up. And again, you can use your hands. One of the best tools in the kitchen. And we're going to season this with some salt and pepper. Okay, I would say for about a pound and a half of cheese, we'll use a good teaspoon of pepper and teaspoon of salt. Remember, you can always add more, but you can't take it out once it's in there. So just mix it in and then taste it and see how you like it. You could put fresh herbs in here, some chives or some rosemary, whatever you like.
Is this kind of cheese just naturally salty or naturally not salty?
Well, Judy makes hers fairly plain and then allows you to do whatever you want to with it. So this one doesn't have a whole lot of salt in it.
It's like a softball of goat cheese right now.
So we got that. Now what we can do is we can decorate it and take some rosemary leaves and just kind of press them into the outside, a little bit of thyme. I think that the rosemary really gives it that kind of Christmas tree look and flavor. And there you have it. That's a nice local goat cheese ball with bacon and dried cherries.
Like all cheese balls, this guy just looks like a big mound of cheese. But once you smear it on a cracker, you'll understand. But make sure you serve this to a big group of people, or you'll find you've eaten the entire thing all by yourself. No joke. You can see all the recipes you hear in today's program on our website and try them for yourself this holiday season, eartheats.org. Now that we have two cheesy appetizers to snack on, let's take a break from the cooking and listen to some music. Krista Detour is a singer-songwriter based in southern Indiana. She recorded an album of holiday-inspired tunes, and here's a selection. This is Christmas in London.
Sleigh bells may ring, the tree may light, carolers may sing, O holy night, O holy eve, where angels be. But I won't leave till you sing to me. Turtle doves may fly as true love tells. Carolers may cry, sweet silver bells, sweet silver wood of Christmas pine.
Krista Detour singing her Christmas in London. That's off her 2006 release, The Silver Wood. Coming up, it's time to put the ducks on to cook. Chef Orr talks about how to cook a perfectly crispy duck over an open fire, and his mom, ML, talks about why she's laying claim to the duck necks. Seriously, the organ meats are all hers. Stay with us.
Yeah.
Okay. I love it.
All right, so let's get these ducks going.
This is A Very Earth Eats Christmas. I'm Annie Corrigan. Thanks for being here. Looks like the fire has burnt down to the perfect heat. So yeah, let's get these ducks going already.
You can, if you want to, you can cook duck so it's kind of medium rare and pink inside. But we're going to do more of a traditional roast duck where we're going to let it get really nice and crispy and crunchy and have that great crisp skin.
That's the best part.
Yeah. But first what we want to do is season our ducks. And I've got two small ducks from Maple Leaf Farm right here in Indiana. And I'm going to season them with some salt and pepper. Always using fresh ground pepper, so it has all those nice essential oils in it.
So you're flipping them now, so you're going to do salt and pepper on both sides.
Season both sides. And we're going to cut up a little bit of citrus to stick inside. And what that does is kind of helps cut the greasiness a little bit and gives you that nice perfume. The juice is, you know, acid, and then the zest has this wonderful fragrance of citrus that will just really perfume the ducks. So I'll put about a half a lemon in each one. And then we're going to add, of course, garlic, which is one of our favorite flavors. Okay, so we're just going to cut this garlic clove kind of east to west, so you really expose all the openings of the garlic. And then we're going to put some rosemary and thyme inside.
Is this a case where you could season it however you like, or are these spices and these flavors especially great for duck?
Well, these do go really nice with duck. I mean, the rosemary has that kind of oily, piney aroma to it, which is really nice with the duck. And the richness and the fattiness of the duck will really pick up these flavors of citrus and the pininess of the rosemary. Thyme's another good one. And these herbs are also herbs that kind of last later into the fall and early winter outside. If you cover them up with some leaves from the garden, you can kind of keep them going almost through the new year.
And just over here, we have the organ meats from the duck cooking up in a pan.
Yeah, kind of spitting out at us. I'm going to throw a little bit of my sweet seasoned spice blend. It has some of those kind of Christmassy aromas to it. And these will be great in stuffing, or we can mix them in with a little bit of wild rice, which would be really tasty. You can use the necks for stock, but there's still actually a good amount of meat, and my mother loves to chew on these necks, so we'll probably just throw them right on the grill with the ducks.
Well, if they're crispy and all that, I just chomp on the bones themselves and eat that. It's so good, and it's taking the whole animal and not wasting anything.
Mary Lou Orr, or ML, also lives in Columbus, Indiana. She met Gretchen Marx when she took art classes from her starting way back in 1969. But really, first and foremost, she's an amazing gardener. She won't admit to any of that, of course. But her entire front yard has been taken over by the most elaborate, gorgeous garden. That's along with the beehives and the winemaking in the basement and a huge compost bin. Her son, Chef Daniel, helps her out with all the work around the garden and the house. And he uses a lot of what they grow in the recipes at his restaurant, Farm, in Bloomington. Sure, Daniel honed his culinary skills in Europe, but his love of local, seasonal cooking started from a very early age, thanks to ML.
When my mother and dad were during the end of the Depression, they were doing chickens on every Saturday and going into town. They had regular customers. But my mother would always, they always cleaned the feet, and they just cut off the toenails and the
rest of that yellow covering comes right off, and they're just this pristine white color, and they're full of collagen because, you know, that's all the gristly-like stuff, and that's so good for you. And so anyhow, they would cook those, and particularly in soup with these other parts. Well, I remember one time I wasn't very old, and we were going to have company for lunch, which would have been called dinner. And so I was dishing up the soup, and Mother said, I believe we won't serve the feet this time to our company, because I think she thought maybe they didn't feel the same way as we did. So
some people are just weirded out by eating the innards, the heart, the liver, the necks, the feet. What would you say to people who are just can't get past the gross factor?
Yeah. Well, they should accept that they can be used to make that wonderful broth and the collagen in that. I mean, they'd have no idea. It would make a fabulous consommé, and they probably don't realize it, but some of those parts are used when they do it commercially, and they get the collagen. And well, another thing is, at the ends of the chicken bones, those are soft when they've been cooked, and inside is the marrow. And you know, marrow is from beef marrow is a very, you know, it's a delicacy, and it's sometimes served with on toast, and you get the marrow bone, and there's even a silver marrow's spoon that you get it out of the bone with, and some of it's European kind of cutlery and utensil stuff. So that was a big thing for some of the kings. They expected their chef to have the marrow for them. So,
so you said they're healthy for you, these organ meats, but how do they taste?
Well, it's a crunchy, crispy taste. That you get on roast pork on the outside, and most of the fat has been cooked out, leaving that crunchiness. Another thing, though, about those meats is they go so wonderfully in pâtés, and not just spreadable ones that you put in a bowl, but ones that you form with gelatin and different layers that then you cut, and you see all of that, and serve with cornichons, and you know, it's a very fancy thing. So,
so can I have a little taste of your duck necks, maybe?
Certainly.
Okay, I'm excited. Thank you.
All right.
Find some recipes using various organ meats on our website, eartheats.org. Now let's listen to another musical selection from Krista Detour. This is The First Christmas Star.
I spend all the year wondering, what will it be? I spend all the year wondering, how have you been? Still reading Shakespeare.
Indiana-based singer, songwriter Krista Detour singing The First Christmas Star.
Okay. All right.
So we've got this beautiful fire. How long has this been going, Gretchen?
I lit it about 7 o'clock.
This morning?
Yes.
You don't want a whole lot of flame. You don't want to cook over a high flame. And as you can see here, I've got this little pan that we're going to catch the drippings on. And I'm going to put the ducks towards the back because I don't want them just to drip on the fire and have a lot of flare up. So we're just going to start these guys. We'll start them on the breast side down.
So you're putting breast side down to get it nice and crispy. How long is it going to sit there?
Well, these can take, you know, this is not the quickest cooking method. So this is more of a, you know, day around the fireplace that you're, you know, cracking walnuts and chatting and eating cheeses, and the ducks slowly cook on the over the fire
and drinking wine
and eggnog. So it's not something that you're going to rush. I would say probably about an hour and a half to 2 hours on the grill.
Well, we are starting at about 10 in the morning. So when would we eat?
That'd be probably mid afternoon.
That's perfect, right? Because yeah. You can still watch a football game.
Right.
True.
Liver's going there. This we're going to let go a little bit quicker. I'm going to move these ducks just back a little bit. And every once in a while, I'm going to baste my ducks back here. And you can kind of see this wonderful collection of things going on. And throughout the day, we'll add a few more things. We've got these figs here we can put down in the drip pan as well. Maybe finish it off with a little bit of red wine and a little bit of butter for a sauce.
Talk to me about these pumpkins that look like, looking on the bottom, looks like they're really starting to cook.
Yeah, these are really starting to cook. They're getting soft. These are pumpkins I grew out by the road. They were volunteers from the compost heap. I'm going to let them slow cook. I'll cut them in half, scoop out the seeds, and then we can put a little bit of brown sugar and butter and maybe a squeeze of lemon juice and some salt and pepper, and they'll be great. And we can just kind of cut them up. They haven't been, you know, processed. A lot of times if you buy squash and things in the supermarket, they'll have been waxed or dipped in wax. These, we know, haven't been wax. You can actually eat the skin and everything on these little guys.
The beauty of growing your own food right there. The ducks will take a little bit more time over the fire, so next we'll move to preparing the first course of our meal. Vegetarians, stay tuned. You'll love these two recipes. This is A Very Earth Eats Christmas. Stay with us. Welcome back. This is A Very Earth Eats Christmas. I'm Annie Corrigan. We're cooking up a storm in Columbus, Indiana today, preparing our holiday feast.
While we're here, how's the duck?
The duck's coming right along. You can smell it. I've turned them over. They're starting to get nice brown on the breast side. We're going to start crisping up the back skin, and then we will finish them off on the breast side one more time to really get that nice crunchy skin. So they've probably got about another hour to go.
So while we're patiently waiting for the ducks to finish off, we'll prepare our first course of parsnip soup and chicken of the woods mushrooms. As our fabulous sous chefs Lee and Brooke are busily chopping the veggies, we'll make some eggnog. Chef Gregory is overseeing the process.
Originally it was in England, and they literally milked the cow into the punch bowl, right? Added the heavy cream and the rum or bourbon to it, and the grated nutmeg.
So it was warm.
It was warm, right.
I've never had milk straight from a cow, but that's sort of weirding me out. Mm.
Well, that's where it comes from.
All right, so eggnog 101. Simple eggnog recipe. It is rich, but you're only going to have it a couple times a year, right around Christmas time, during the holidays. And so you might as well go out and do the real thing. And so it incorporates a lot of heavy cream, half and half, milk, egg yolks, sugar, all those great things. And we also have today some Harrison
bourbon, which is an Indiana bourbon from Brazil, Indiana. So we're going to start. We've got 4 egg yolks and 1/2 cup of sugar and 1 tablespoon of grated lemon zest. Okay, so we're going to put that in our mixing bowl. All right, and we get this, turn this on. We're just going to whip this until it forms a ribbon. So the egg yolks will get nice and yellow, a very, very kind of sunny color when they whisk with the sugar, and we call that, you know, form a ribbon. So here we go. I would always use really local fresh eggs for this. If you have any suspicion of the eggs being old, don't use them raw, okay? All right, Annie, you can see how this is starting to become a pale yellow, which in culinary terms it's called form a ribbon. So I'll take this off and show you why we call it that. Okay, you can see how when it drips, it doesn't fade right into the mix. It kind of forms a little ribbon around.
Oh, okay. Okay. I see.
All right. To this, we're going to add a little bit of my sweet seasons. You could also use a nutmeg and cinnamon mixture if you'd want. That's about 3/4 teaspoon. Okay, we're going to fold in our 1 1/2 cups of whipped heavy cream.
Now we're getting to the good stuff.
And 4 egg whites that are whipped. And then I'll grab a regular handheld spatula and fold that all together. You can see it's getting that kind of yellow color that you think of when you think about eggnog. But you'll see that it's much lighter. There's a completely different texture to this than the stuff you buy in a jug at the local big box store. Now we're going to add about 3 ounces of this good bourbon. And we're going to add a little bit of milk or 1/2 and 1/2, whichever you want. Stir all that in. Okay, we got to taste it, right?
Any volunteers? Mm. The hands go in the air. It doesn't work on radio, ladies. Yay. I need me, me, me.
Okay, let's get a little ladle here. And we'll let Gretchen and ML be the taste testers here.
It's a tough job, ladies. You think you can handle it?
Someone has to do it.
Right. There you go.
Thank you. Mm, gosh.
Mm. And we have eggnog mustaches, 2 of them.
Oh, my goodness.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
If you want to make the eggnog recipe for your holiday celebration, visit our website at eartheats.org. Now, time for another piece of music by Krista Detour. This one's celebrating all sorts of holiday drinks. It's called Hot Buttered Rum.
Tinsel trees, turtle dove, get along, turtle dove. Holly wreath on the door and the mistletoe above. But just the thing, ring-a-ling, hear the bells jingling. Is calling to me from afar, not very far. And there you are, so give me one hot toddy and a little mulled wine. Chase it with a wassail and the wassail is fine. Sip of cider and the eggnog will hum. But Christmas isn't Christmas till you had a cup of hot buttered rum. Pa-rum-pa-pum-pum. Pretty lights in the night, Christmas star in the night, candy cane, sugar.
Off her 2006 release, The Silver Wood, that's Krista Detour singing Hot Buttered Rum.
So for you personally, what are 4 or 5 dishes that are an absolute must for a Christmas feast?
Fresh oysters, pate that we made, roast goose with stuffings, the roasted stuffed apples, and red cabbage was always an important part of Christmas.
Oysters, where would you get the oysters?
We always had, and as a child, we always had oysters. I grew up in the East in upstate New York, and we always had oysters for Christmas. And in France, you always had oysters where I spent my years learning to cook.
Some fresh oysters would work well in our soup, in which we're using a very seasonal veggie, parsnips.
They're kind of like white carrots. They've got a really nice sweet flavor. Have you ever had a raw one?
I have. From you, last time we did parsnips.
That's good.
Yeah, really good. Real kind of perfumey, a little bit floral. What we're going to do is, of course, start with some garlic. So I'm just going to tap these cloves down so they're easy to peel. So we're going to start with the garlic, and I always like to start the garlic in a little bit of olive oil and let it get just a little bit brown, a little bit nutty. All right.
Parsnips are a root vegetable.
Right.
So about when are you picking these from your garden?
Well, parsnips are one of the great vegetables that you can leave in the ground most of the winter. And until you get a super, super hard freeze, you can just go out and dig them. You can do the same thing with horseradish root. Turnips can go out a little bit longer, but not as long as parsnips. Things like sweet potatoes, you need to dig those before the first frost. But the parsnips, you can just leave in the ground, and they have their own little refrigerator going. So we've got some garlic browning. I would say 3 cloves of garlic. And to that, we're going to add 2 white onions. And these are diced in about quarter-inch dice. We can increase the heat. We're going to add a little bit of shallot. That's about 2 shallots diced. And we're going to let the onions and shallots cook a little bit. And what that does is it allows them to release their natural sugars. Since we're using since we're doing a light soup, we're going to just let the sugars come out and do more of a sweating of the vegetables. But you always want to cook your onions in a little bit of oil before you add your other ingredients, because that brings the kind of the sulfur out of the onions and it'll make them sweeter and less pungent. So now we've got these coated and they're a little bit shiny, a little bit translucent. We're going to add the parsnips, and I have about 6 parsnips here. All right, and we're going to let those get coated. And I'm going to leave this more of a rustic soup. I'm not going to puree it today. We're going to leave it nice and chunky. I'm going to add about 3 cups of water to this. You could use also a light vegetable stock or a light chicken stock. But I think that to really taste the parsnips, the water is just perfect. All right, I'm going to hit this with a little bit of salt and pepper. And we'll just cover it and let it simmer.
That's it? That's it?
We'll come back and finish it with a little heavy cream. It is Christmas, so, you know, we're going to use some heavy cream in this. All right, and then you can use spinach to finish this off. I'm going to actually use sweet potato leaves. A lot of people didn't know that you can eat sweet potato leaves, but they are just like a really nice spinach.
Can I have a taste?
Yeah, let me give you a little taste, the raw ones. I pulled them off before the first frost, and then you can keep them for a couple weeks in the fridge.
They were mild. I'm surprised. They're really tasty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very much like a spinach, but you know how sometimes spinach leaves that kind of weird thing in your mouth where it kind of dries out around your teeth? These don't do that, so they're even better than spinach. We're going to just add these in, and they'll give us a nice kind of contrast of colors and textures. The parsnips, just kind of tearing it a little bit, and they'll just kind of melt down. And that's all there is to it. We're going to season it to taste with a little salt and pepper. And that will be our first course. Another wonderful thing to do with this soup would be to finish it with some freshly shucked oysters.
Chef Gregory was talking about how raw oysters for him are a must for a Christmas celebration.
Absolutely. Raw oysters were big. You know, they always said that you eat oysters with the months with R's in them. But that was just traditionally because those were the coldest months. So you wouldn't eat them during the summer because they couldn't be shipped safely. But nowadays you can eat them all year round. But they do have a special place in people's hearts during the Christmas season. And this soup would be a great way to serve them for people that may not like them raw,
but would like them just slightly warm through. And what I always say is you just cook them until they start to smile. And that means they're just going to kind of crinkle up around the edges, but you don't want to bring them to a boil. You just want them to smile a little bit in the pot. Here you go. Have a taste.
Don't mind if I do.
Very hot.
Check out photos of the soup on our website and print off the recipe while you're there. It's at eartheats.org. One final dish before we take the ducks off the fire, pour the wine, and sit down to enjoy our holiday meal.
Well, we've got some chicken of the woods mushrooms. These are, they really do have the taste and texture of chicken.
Mmm, you're right.
Aren't those delicious? What we do is we braise them. A lot of other mushrooms you wouldn't add this much liquid to, but these kind of slow cook, and they can tend to be a little bit dry, but when you cook them in a little bit of chicken stock or a little bit of vegetable stock, they absorb the moisture. You can finish it with a little bit of butter. And they have this really nice bright yellow bottom and kind of an orangey lobster shell colored top. And they keep in the refrigerator quite well for a week or two. So if you're lucky enough to find them, you can keep them around. You can also braise them off and freeze them and save them for Christmas time. So that's what I love to do is to, you know, gather these things throughout the year. And then during December is the time to celebrate. And luckily, you know, I can cook pretty well. So people like to come visit.
So when did you find these?
These were found by a guy who works at FHB, the Firehouse Broadcasting, and he called me and said, what do I do with these mushrooms? So I told him, and he said, well, you know, it seems like a lot of work. Why don't you just have them? So I said, yeah, I'll take them.
It's so good to have friends.
Yeah, it's wonderful. Throughout the year, different people call me. They'll have a tree full of cherries, or a churchyard had a pear tree in it and nobody wanted the pears. So, you know, I was serving churchyard pears at the restaurant. So a lot of fun.
Like what time of year for these guys?
These are best in early October, mid-October, right around Halloween time. You also find things like puffballs at that time of year, which are also good. They're big, round, firm white mushrooms. And you can slice those up and make like lasagnas. And I even make mushroom marshmallows out of those. I cube them and then deep fry them and then sprinkle them with a little bit of truffle oil. And they're just like explosions of mushroom. Yeah.
Wow.
Mm. One more for you?
Yes, please.
It's hot.
Gosh, it's good.
Why don't you take the seat down here, Gretch? You're at the head of the table.
Wow, looks great. Should we have a little wine?
Everything's better with a little wine.
What's that? Are you putting the cheese next to me on purpose? This is just meat. Take this. Put that over there.
Right here. We're calling you.
Boy, this is terrific. Look at this feast.
I'd say this was a fantastic day's work.
Right? All right, bon appétit, Monsieur Dame.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, everyone.
It was a great day of cooking with friends, and gosh, what a feast. Find the recipes for all the dishes on our website, along with dishes we couldn't include today, like baked apples, country ham, and ML's fire-starting bouquets. There's so much going on at eartheats.org. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible. Mary Lou Orr, Chef Jim Gregory, Lee Bush, Brooke Baker, and Eric Bolstridge. Thanks to Gretchen Marks for allowing us to take over her kitchen. And special thanks to Chef Daniel Orr for making all the great food happen today. Earth Eats is a production of WFIU, Indiana Public Media. Our staff includes syndication manager Lou Ann Johnson, marketing director John Bailey, executive producer Carrie Boyce, webmaster Aabon Binder, and executive in charge Perry Metz. I'm your host and producer, Annie Corrigan. Thanks for listening to A Very Earth Eats Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone.